Welcome to another Leon Chani Report, and tonight we have Tony Coles with us, who's an excellent lawyer, number one. He used to be the deputy mayor of the city of New York, and is a very close friend of Rudy Giuliani. Maybe he'll tell us some things we don't know about Rudy Giuliani, although I guess Page Six would probably get everything together. Then we have David Amelman, who's a former journalist for CBS and Forbes, and now is part of the World Policy Institute. And thereafter, Hank Scheinkoff, who is a political consultant. You see him all over the tube, and he's telling Democrats how to become winners. So we got a full-fledged show. First off, we want to wish everyone a happy Hanukkah if you're Jewish. If you're not Jewish, light a candle, pretend you are, and you'll get a gift. In any case, it's the merry time of the season, so all our wishes to you for a great Hanukkah, Christmas, New Year's, etc. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Leon. Nice to be back.
I am puzzled, as many Americans are, about this trial for the terrorists that is going to happen in Manhattan. First thing is, you're an expert in litigation. Could they have chosen a different venue, like White Plains or Montana? Why did they pick Manhattan?
Well, they picked Manhattan because the crime occurred in Manhattan. But that really begs a broader question as to whether or not these war criminals should be tried in a civil court at all,
right?
Doesn't it? I mean, it seems to me, if you're a war criminal, you should be tried in a military court. If you're not a war criminal, then you should be tried in a civil court. But the idea of trying war criminals in civil court in New York, to me, doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't know why war criminals should be entitled to all the protections of American citizens. I don't know why New York should be subjected to the type of expense and the type of risk that the trial is going to present, although I think the police department and the marshal service can do a terrific job protecting everybody. There's no reason why they should have to. And more significantly, if you commit a war crime, doesn't it make sense for you to be tried in a military court? That's what military courts are for.
All right. So you're saying obvious things. So what happened here? What do you think happened here? Excuse me.
It's hard to understand, for me to understand. I think the real explanation is a difference in philosophy about America's commitment to fighting Islamic terrorism. I know a lot of people who have criticized Obama have said that he's exhibiting a pre-9/11
mentality
or an outlook in doing this. And there is, I think, an element of significant truth to that. Is, in other words, you're treating people who are at war with us as if they robbed a bank or were involved in some sort of street incident. And it's not the proper, most effective way to go about defending our country. If we're at war with people and we capture people who commit crimes of war against us, I don't see why they should be treated to the benefits of a civil court.
Let me point out, you're neither a Democrat or a Republican, am I correct?
Yeah, I'm neither a Democrat or a Republican.
So you're talking as an independent,
yes.
as a man who knows a lot about the courts, and that's
right.
Your business.
Right.
The rules of evidence are different, are they not, in a criminal court versus a military court, right? Military
sure.
justice different.
Sure.
Do you know
sure.
the differences?
Sure. No, I'm not an expert in the differences. And I feel confident, although you never know for sure, that the Department of Justice will obtain a conviction in federal court in New York. But I don't think that that's the point. I think the point is, what is the right message we want to send to the world? What is the right message we want to send to our military as to how we're conducting ourselves against people who have declared war on us? I think trying people in a civil court who committed war crimes doesn't make any sense. I mean, to take an example, had we captured Adolf Hitler at the end of World War II, would we have brought him to New York and tried him in a civil court? No, he would have been tried in a military court before a military tribunal. Now, the fact that the incident occurred in New York doesn't seem to me to change the basic calculus, which is there's a difference between capturing someone who's at war with you and the police arresting a criminal or the FBI arresting a criminal. And I think it's important for the country to make those distinctions. I think it focuses on what we're doing and the risks that we're facing from Islamic terrorism.
So President Obama would argue that we want to show that we're a great democracy, that we are able to give everybody their full legal rights, and that we're not afraid of anything. And I believe that he expects politically that this would have ramifications in the Arab world. I think that's his justification.
You know, as we show every day in every courthouse around the country that we're a great democracy, I don't think that we have to take Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and try him in New York to prove that to anybody. And if that is the justification, and unfortunately I think it may be, then I think it's unfortunate, because that doesn't make any sense. It shows a defensiveness about our system. It shows a hesitation about our commitment to the war against terrorism. And in a way, it shows that we're willing to, I think in part, make political determinations in order to deal with matters of war. Because that's ultimately what you just articulated, was a political determination. And I don't think this is the right place for political determinations at all.
There's no question. I think that it's a political move. I think it probably was not Holder alone. I think he probably had instructions to do it. I think it has to do with the broad scope of Obama trying to differentiate himself from George Bush in terms of the Arab and Muslim world. And I think he's using this as a show horse in a sense of what America is, the new America. But it's very dangerous, in my opinion. God forbid if you have an incident here and something happens. That's from a practical viewpoint. That's terrible. Number two, what you're doing is you're giving a microphone to these defendants to scream all over the world and grab headlines. And I think this, what's his name, the Sheikh has confessed already. I think they have his confession. So what you're going to allow him to do is just make a great speech. And I don't know if that's incendiary or not to the people or to the world. And the third thing is that you have victims of 9/11 who are really protesting vehemently and strongly against this. So I'm not clear the forces that compelled this to happen. I don't know. Can it be reversed? What do you think?
I think at this point it's too late, to reverse it. I think it is going down the road, and I think it's happening. I think it's a decision that we will regret for a number of years, and it'll take a long time to play out because trials always do. So this will go on. So this will go on for another couple of years,
and then appeals,
and then appeals, and it raises all sorts of questions that I don't even know if the Department of Justice can answer. Is Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, is he entitled to be Mirandized?
You gotta explain that. Miranda rights means you're entitled to a lawyer?
Sure. Well, no, he'll be entitled to a lawyer.
But Miranda rights are stronger. You got to explain that.
Yeah.
It's an old case. It's
an old Supreme Court that sets out basic rights that, on the whole, people who are war criminals are not entitled to.
Right.
It's rights that are made available to United States citizens. And although they're important rights and the rights that are available in trial, if you're not given your Miranda warnings, you have the right to remain silent, you have the right to counsel, and counsel will be made available to you if you can't afford one. If the police don't give you your Miranda rights, well, then the case against you can be dismissed. Now, it's outrageous to think that this guy, this terrorist, might be entitled to his Miranda rights. No, I don't think he is. But why would we even go down that road when we have someone who we know committed one of the most heinous war crimes in the history of the country? What are we really doing?
And he admits it.
And he admits it. Why don't we treat this incident for what it is? It's a war crime. Let's not pretend it's something else. Or let's not try to use this incident, as you were saying, as some way of appealing to elements of the Arab world. I'm not sure that that's what's going on. But that makes no sense at all. The way you develop respect in the world is you do the right thing. And the right thing over here is to try this war criminal in a military court. That's how you gain respect in the world. I think the Arab population would understand that and respect that. And I don't think that you should sort of make up excuses or make up other alternatives for political reasons, which appears to be what's happening here.
Yeah, it's a very sensitive issue, and most people that I talk to, most lawyers that I talk to, and I'm a lawyer as you are feeling it the same way you do. We don't see the sense of it. But there must be something that's compelling it. If will the ACLU take this as a case also? What do you think?
Well, I mean, certainly there will be lawyers who will be assigned to represent each of these war criminals. There's a panel in the courthouse that handles capital cases.
Who would pay them, by the way?
Oh, they get paid by the government. I mean, it is part of what we were talking about in terms of Miranda. If you can't afford a lawyer will be made available to you. And here, probably, they'll be assigned lawyers. If these terrorists want lawyers, that they don't have to have lawyers.
They
may want to go and defend themselves. But again, I think it's important to point out, I think that the police and the Marshal Service and all the organizations that they're going to work to keep New York safe and to organize the trial can do that effectively, and they've done it effectively on other occasions.
You worked with them when you were deputy mayor.
Sure,
with the police.
Sure. Right? And we have had terrorism. We've had terrorists put on trial in New York before, and the police and the Marshal Service and the FBI, they've always done a terrific job in maintaining the order that they have to. But again, the question is not, you know, can they, but should they? And what kind of message are we sending?
Well, I think you're firm in your attitude. I think there's no holes in it. That's really the way you feel. Many, many people feel your way. The interesting... Obama is a smart man, Harvard Law Review. He knows the law. He's a constitutional lawyer, I believe, at the University of Chicago. Right. So he understands this as well as anybody.
Right. Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's fair to say that...
It's a political move.
Well, I don't... And I disagree with it on substance. If politics is motivating it, I think that's unfortunate. As a substantive matter, I don't think it's the right thing to do. I mean, we did try Zacharias Moussaoui in the civilian court, the so-called 20th hijacker in Virginia. But here we have a different circumstance, is we have military tribunals. A number of the people who are being held in Guantanamo are going to be tried in those military tribunals. Essentially, the administration made an exception for the group that's going to be tried in New York. And I don't think that exception was the right thing to do. I think they should have been tried in military tribunals the same way that the others who were held in Guantanamo are going to be tried.
Okay, on a generic question, are you satisfied with the presidency of Obama today?
I'm not. And not as a question of politics, but as a question of the direction that the country is moving in. I'm concerned about decisions like the decision that we're just talking about now that seems to me to be not the right approach to how we need to combat terrorism and keep our shores safe. I think any person in the United States has to be deeply concerned about what's happening to our budget and to our budget deficit, what that is going to mean for our kids, for our grandkids, for our great-grandkids, and as far as the eye can see. So I don't think that Obama has done as good a job as I thought he would do when he first came into office. I think he's in a very difficult job. There's a lot going on in the world. And I think for the country's sake, I hope it turns around.
He's overloaded with a lot of issues, obviously.
Yeah, I'm concerned that the health debate has distracted a lot of time and a lot of focus from things that ultimately are more important. I mean, he's in a big skirmish with Congress over something that in the end I'm not sure is going to make us that much better of a country, that much better of a society.
Which issue is that?
The health care debate and the new health plan.
Do you think he'll get that through?
I don't know. I think he'll get some form of it through. I mean, the question I would ask is there are lots of health programs that we have, lots of health programs that can go a long way towards covering a lot of the people who are uninsured. And I don't know why we don't work with the programs we have now than trying to sort of create yet another large government program and put it on top of Medicare, put it on top of Medicaid, put it on top of Child Health Plus, when those programs themselves are not being used as efficiently as they could. So I do think that President Obama, in a way, is his first reflex is to have a larger government. I think that's why we're seeing such a large deficit. And I think that is a problem.
Do you believe that Rudy Giuliani, your former boss, would be doing a better job tonight?
Well, I'm a great believer in Rudy Giuliani's executive prowess because I've seen it firsthand.
Right.
I mean, I saw New York in 1994, and then I saw New York 8 years later when Rudy had finished two terms in office. And I can tell you the New York 8 years later was a lot better than the New York that we saw when Rudy first came office. So yeah, I have a lot of confidence in Rudy Giuliani. It looks like he's not going to run for governor or for Senate. I would love to see him back in public office. So
mayor
so
again after Bloomberg.
No, yeah, well, I don't know. And
we'll put you back there. You know,
right.
The trial will probably still be going on if he wins.
I hope not.
You'll be his corporation counsel.
Right.
You miss, by the way, public service.
Public service is a great thing to do, and we had a wonderful time in the Giuliani administration. So it is something that I keep with me and cherish every day. So I don't really feel as though I've left public service. I still stay involved in the not-for-profit world. I pay close attention to what's happening in city government. And then I enjoy being at DLA Piper and being a lawyer now also. I think you have to do different things in your life.
Maybe you want to become a cantor. I can use a second.
Well, I don't think you're going to want me as a cantor.
The Bloomberg administration, are you satisfied the way they are operating?
I am satisfied. And I'll tell you the things that I think are most important for any city government. And then I think that Bloomberg meets most of those. I think first is it's an honest government. I think that is critical.
Yeah, he doesn't need any graft. That's
well,
for sure.
And his people are honest people. And I think you get straight answers. I'm a great believer that the most important thing for any mayor to do is keep the streets safe. Second most important thing is to keep the streets clean. And then the third most important thing, now that the mayor has control of the school system, is try to make sense out of that massive bureaucracy that runs our schools. I think on all of those, he is doing a good job. I might want to see more cops on the street. I think the police department is an extraordinary agency, the most efficient agency, along with the other public safety agencies in city government. And I know the number of cops has been cut. I think I would probably want to see more cops, but I know that the mayor is paying attention to that.
No one can argue with you. I think one of the great things Bloomberg did, by the way, is he cut out a lot of smoking in a city. You know that?
Well, I do know.
And he also lowered the calories, right?
Yeah, well, I occasionally like my cigar or maybe dessert, and
really?
I want to have them with a little bit of flexibility.
Other people smoke cigars, really?
Yeah. I think there's still a couple of places you can
Omar,
find a smoke.
Bibi Netanyahu, Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani has been a very close friend of Ehud Olmert, and I'm sure he's giving him some encouragement now. Ehud Olmert is going to be tried for some misdemeanors or possibly felonies. I don't know. So it's a tough time. I know they're very close.
Yes. I met Mayor Olmert at the time he was mayor, when he was here, and I was very impressed with him. I'm sorry to see how all of this played out in Israel.
Well, I am, too. I know him a long time. Tony, good to see you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on the show.
And we'll follow this trial. I think Tony's words explain it very clearly, that the feelings amongst a lot of the legal community is that this trial should have been in a military court and not brought to New York City under the system that is going to occur. But we'll see how it plays out. It could affect Obama politically, and we'll see how that occurs also. All right, we'll be right back with one of our great guests, David Endelman, and thereafter Hank Shankoff. We'll be seeing you in about 1 minute.
Explore new worlds. Read. Visit literacy.gov and let the journey begin.
little girl, your daddy's little girl, till heaven home.
It's easy to tell if you've had way too many. But what if you've had just one too many? Buzz driving is drunk driving.
The bear climbed over the mountain, the bear climbed over the mountain, the bear climbed over the mountain, and what do you think he saw? What do you think he saw? What do you think he saw? The bear climbed over the mountain, the bear climbed over the mountain, the bear climbed over the mountain, and what do you think he saw?
Gotta get there. Oh, I must be careful there. Well, that's a nice picture.
Come on, Anna.
Okay.
Foreclosure doesn't affect just you. It affects your whole family, too. If you've fallen behind on your mortgage, we can help. Call 1-888-995-HOPE, because nothing is worse than doing nothing.
We're back. We're talking to David Andelman, who is the editor of the World Policy Journal, which is really on a high. It's moving very, very quickly. He'll explain the mission of this journal. But before we get to the journal, let's talk a little bit about world politics with David, who really knows. So the president was in Copenhagen getting the Nobel Peace Prize. After last week, he said he wants to put 30,000 more troops in Afghanistan. There are many who say that had this occurred, he would not get the Nobel. Do you believe that?
Well, I don't know if he would not have gotten it. There's an interesting cartoon. You know, I'm on Jeff Danziger's email list. Jeff is one of the great editorial cartoonists in America. And he sent me one today, or just well, the other day. I've been away for a month in Asia. But he sent me a cartoon that showed Bush, right? And he's putting the jacket that says, the presidential jacket on Obama, and it says, War President. And he says, finally, he's gotten it off his shoulders. Now it's Obama's.
Wow, that's true.
Yeah. So
I am sure inherently, viscerally, Obama does not want to send troops there. But I think he had to do it because of the military, the policy. We're in a jam.
Did Lyndon Johnson want to send troops to Vietnam the way he did?
No, yeah. They get stuck. Yeah. Exactly. They don't know how to get out of it.
He doesn't know how to get out of it. And not only that...
What's your opinion, by the way? Should he send these troops or not?
This point, I don't think we have a choice. Several people have asked me that. In fact, the editor-in-chief of Le Monde Diplomatique in Paris asked me that a little while ago. We had two choices. You're either all in or you're
all out.
I mean, it's that simple. And at this point, if we get all out, then it's Pakistan. And you talk about dominoes in Southeast Asia during Vietnam. This is the ultimate domino. Vietnam didn't have nuclear weapons. Vietnam didn't have a way of projecting, you know, the war to the shores of the United States. It goes, if we get out and the Taliban get in, and Al-Qaeda gets in and gets those nuclear weapons in Pakistan, it's game over. Game over.
Is there any stability in Pakistan, in your opinion?
Not much right now. I mean, it's a very scary situation when you have the
Do
nuclear
they have
arsenal.
Do they have any leadership there?
Well, the control of the nuclear arsenal was suddenly given up by the president, thrown over to the prime minister.
Because
God knows who in the prime minister's office has a finger on the nuclear button. You know, it's very scary.
Is that true? It's now with the prime minister?
Yeah.
Do you know that the prime minister, he used to be the former head of Citibank Private Bank.
Right.
Did you know that?
Not surprising.
He was.
Sure.
I'm not sure where his family stayed. I mean, they may have lived in New York. So the president, who is the widower of what's her name?
Benazir Bhutto,
who has sort of a shady past, right? He had some corruption.
Well,
in there.
He was. Benazir was an extraordinary woman. I knew her at Harvard when she was at Harvard. She graduated Harvard. A very smart lady.
So you knew her well.
I knew her pretty well. I think she would have been a wonderful president, really wonderful president, just the right kind of person we needed at this very moment. But alas, she got assassinated, which I think you probably could have predicted. In fact, I think you probably did predict it at one point,
it's
Leon.
Terrible.
But it's tough. It's very difficult times over there.
All right. You've been traveling for 1 month in Asia?
Right. We went to Thailand. We went to Bhutan, which I had never been to. It's the one country in Southeast Asia I've never been to. I covered Southeast Asia for the New York Times for several years back in the 70s.
Right.
And Bhutan is the one country I'd never been to. But it's a very interesting strategic position.
It's a sovereign country?
It's a sovereign country. It's one of the few there that haven't been absorbed either by India or
it's
China.
It's in the UN,
whatever.
Too?
It's in the UN. It does not have diplomatic relations with any member of the Security Council, including the United States. We do not have diplomatic relations with it. But it is the buffer between India and China.
Really?
And it is a hugely strategic place.
You went there for vacation or business?
A little of both. I had a chat with the Prime Minister for an hour, the Foreign Minister
for
lunch.
How big is the country?
It's the size of Switzerland in area. It's got 650,000 people, which is one-tenth the size of Switzerland.
It's a quiet place?
It's quiet. It's a beautiful, beautiful, idyllic country.
You know what will happen? All the banks will go there now.
Well, this could happen. It lives off something they call gross national happiness. That's how it decides whether it's prospering. Not gross domestic product. Gross national happiness.
What does that
GNH.
Mean? They get latkes on Hanukkah? What happens over
there? They do surveys to find out how content the people are with their lot in life, if you will.
Wow, it's fascinating.
It is.
So how do you spell it?
Bhutan. Bhutan. Bhutan.
We are the first TV show to ever do a show about Bhutan.
There you are. Next week is its national day, in fact. It has a king, 29-year-old king.
They have an honor guard.
Graduate of Andover and former student at Wheaton College, and he's just terrific. He's the fifth king in their history.
It's tribal, so
there are a number.
They have a legislature.
It's the original. Yes, it does. It just went democratic about a year and a half ago. Actually,
reminds me of Bahrain, by the way.
Well, not exactly, but
no. When I was in Bahrain, it was an emir who changed to a kingdom, and then they had a parliament. They were the first Arab country to
have a
parliament. Now, do they have a parliament in?
They do. They have a National Assembly. We sat in on it when it was debating cigarette smoking and the importing of cigarettes into the country. The king is a 29-year-old young man. He's quite extraordinary. He's virtually worshipped by the people. The people love the king.
Oh, they're happy.
Yeah, they're happy.
It's amazing. Do they have an airport?
There's one airport, in Thimphu, the capital. They're talking about opening one on the other side of the mountains. It's bisected by the foothills of the Himalayan range. We went over a pass. It's 12,900 feet high to get to eastern Bhutan,
wow,
where almost no one goes.
Mostly Indian?
It's very closely allied with India.
Is it Muslim, Islamic?
It's Buddhist, and very devoutly Buddhist. Everybody there is a devout.
People
Buddhist.
Mistake Buddhism. Buddhism is not a religion. It's really a way of life.
You know,
everybody thinks you're a Buddhist. You know, you're in a temple or something. It's a way of life.
It's truly a way of life, and it really motivates their entire country. There's one American who's going there to put in a hazelnut
synagogue
operation.
Yet?
I did not find a synagogue.
But I'm sure you'll find a Hasidic guy coming over there.
There you are.
Wow, what an interesting thing.
Yep.
And how did you fly? What airline goes there?
Druk Air is the only airline that goes there. It's the Druk is Dragon. It's Dragon Kingdom, and it's their airline.
Dragon Air is China.
Well, no, it's called Druk Air. Druk is the translation in their language of Dragon. And it flies to Bangkok, Thimphu, which is how we went.
Do they have a downtown,
place.
A shopping area?
They do. They have, in fact, they have a couple of, we met the biggest real estate developer there, the Donald Trump of Bhutan, who's building his first big shopping center there with first escalators to come to the country.
They probably have a McDonald's there already, right?
They're Otis. They do have McDonald's. No, they don't have McDonald's.
Really?
They have McDonald's in Bangkok, but not in Bhutan yet.
Do they have any tall buildings?
No. The tallest building is 5 stories, and they intentionally keep it that way.
And what kind of hotels do they have?
Couple of very nice hotels. We stayed in a locally owned hotel. There's also an Indian hotel, the Taj. And there's a chain of hotels that's owned by an Indian billionaire that is fabulous. It's $1,500 a night. And Angelina Jolie has gone there and stayed there.
If she was alone, a lot of people would be more tempted. Maybe Tiger Woods.
There you are.
But
no, it's a very interesting place. I'll be writing about it in our spring issue of, and we'll be having some pictures of it.
Tell us about this world policy. It looks very
25
formidable.
Years old. We just celebrated our 25th anniversary.
And you're the editor. How long?
I'm the editor since for a year and a half now since I left.
You really look like you're happy there.
It's a wonderful magazine. It's unlike any other magazine published in America.
Why? Really. Why is it different?
Well, it's different from our two competitors. We like to say the difference is our first names: Foreign Affairs, Foreign Policy. Ours is world policy.
Okay.
They think of the United States as the world as something somehow foreign to the United States. But we consider the United States as part of the world. And it's really, we try to have articles and writers from all over the world sort of looking at their regions and what's going on there.
So, you have an institute too?
Yes, the World Policy Institute. We invite you to come down there and speak there for us.
Well, I got to go to Oxford first.
I know you do.
When I come back from Oxford, then we'll go to the World Policy Institute. But you have some great authors here. Tell us about Facing Down the Hydro Crisis, The Great Arctic Melt, Iraq Water, Water Nowhere.
See, right, the Martin Shulov's piece from Baghdad is extraordinary.
Yeah, what is that?
There's a drought going on, an extraordinary drought that's affecting 2 million people in Iraq. When we leave there finally, when we pull out of Iraq finally, we're going to leave a country behind that has virtually no water resources of its own, that's dependent on Turkey and Iran and Syria for its water to come down through there. And they're turning it off. It's a huge crisis.
That's very dangerous. You know, when I was doing the Middle East business, or still do, the biggest issue is always water. Not oil, water.
I believe that the future wars, the future wars will be water wars.
I agree
if
with
there
you.
Are any.
I agree with
not
you.
Not oil.
This is exactly the point. We talked about it all the time when we were doing this Camp David stuff. Water, water, water.
It's critical. You know, we had a piece, not in this issue, but in the previous issue, on the Tibetan glaciers. You know, the melting of the Tibetan glaciers could affect 2 billion people in the entire Asian region. Virtually every major river in Asia flows from the Tibetan plateau, and the glaciers are melting too quickly. The Yellow River, the Ganges, the Mekong, all of these rivers, they all come from Tibet. The water melts there. The glaciers melt there. The water evaporates. The rivers go away. Very scary in the future.
Are you nervous about the collapse of the economies all around the world and what this does to the stabilization of the policies of the countries and the military moves, etc.?
I'm not that nervous about this.
No?
Leon, I'm old enough to have seen a lot of cycles, okay? I remember back in the 1970s when I first got married to my first wife, and we got our wedding presents.
You had a second
and we
wife?
decided we're going to put the money into something that's really secure, because I was going overseas for the New York Times for the first time. We just wanted to park the money for a while, and our financial advisor said, "Oh, put it in New York City municipal notes. It's the safest thing around." Remember 1974?
Mac bonds, very
1974.
Well.
So I've seen these cycles.
You remember the headline? Ford tells Beam, drop dead. You remember that?
Ford to City, drop dead.
Right.
New York Daily News. Absolutely.
You know, I became Abe Beam's lawyer. He never forgave Ford for that until his dying days.
I'm sure.
And Abe was really an honest man and a decent man and tried to do really his best. Incorruptible. You could not corrupt Abe Beam. Yeah. And he got such a bad rap. And then the guy from Lazare Frere came in, and what's his name?
Felix Roet.
Felix Roet, and created the Mac bonds, and I paid down.
Eventually, but, you know.
And I can tell you, Abe Beam's whole estate, he's dead, and his son is Bud Beam, was all in New York City bonds. Yeah. He always showed his faith.
Sure.
It's amazing.
Sure.
And I know it. He told me.
But so to answer your question, Leon, I think it's a cycle. You know, the economies expand and they contract. They go up and they go down, just like the stock markets. And this happens to be a larger cycle downward than it was previously, since the Great Depression. But we've had a bigger up cycle also before that. So you're bound to have these cycles. You have a big cycle now, and you'll have some more cycles in
the
future.
You know, you're on a spin from Boomtown Happiness. And people are going to...
Not at all.
It's good for people to hear you, because they are very, very... There are many, very many people who are very worried about what's going on. And it's good to hear you.
I have my money not in the United States, believe it or not, but I have my retirement savings. I have it in Russia, in China, in Brazil, places like that, right? My money has doubled this year. Doubled, okay? Now, it really got whacked last year. But this year, my money has doubled.
And you did this on your own? You had advice to do?
On my own. Well, they're funds, you know, mutual funds. When I was at Forbes, we couldn't own individual stocks. So smart mutual funds that are invested in different parts of the world, and I've picked and chosen. And you know, it's done.
David's had an illustrious career, and it continues. He was with the New York Times. He was with CBS.
Indeed.
And he was with Forbes, and now at the World Policy Institute. So you've seen the world. It's good for people to hear you, by the way.
Well, good. So maybe I'm optimistic.
I know. It looks good. Anybody wears bow ties looks good to me. I had an old senator, Vance Hartke. He said, oh, sure. Anybody who smoked a pipe can never make a decision. Everybody who wears a bow tie looks intellectual. So that's it. But people need to hear what you're saying. It's very important.
The Indian ambassador to Bhutan still smokes a pipe. What do you think of that?
He's probably 100 years old.
No, right? No. He's a smart young guy. His grandfather was the first Supreme Court justice of the Supreme Court of India, you know, after the British.
Do they have a court system in Bhutan?
They do. In fact, they're looking for a chief justice now for the Supreme Court because they have to retire at the age of 65. The king has to retire at the age of 65.
Really? And
yep.
Who takes his place? His son?
His son or, yeah, his son.
Do they have a government, like a prime minister or
yep.
president?
Yep. Had a long chat with the prime minister. Very smart man. He used to be ambassador at the UN.
They have a small army or police force?
They have an army and a police force.
Really?
Indian forces are also present in the country.
They have a relationship with India? Is that
very close.
Like a protectorate?
It's not a protectorate, but I like to say that the Indian ambassador is effectively the proconsul, like the old Roman proconsul.
Because I used to work in the Netherlands Antilles, which was an interesting place. They had a prime minister and they had a functioning government.
But, and a queen.
But the queen was in the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Right. And Menachem Begin, by the way, I believe, thought of those types of places as autonomy, because they basically don't have foreign ministries and defense forces.
Right.
But Bhutan, you say, has an army.
They do. It's a small army.
And they have a foreign ministry, too?
They have a foreign ministry. They have a defense ministry. They have a whole government set up. They have a finance minister. We met the head of the head of the Anti-Corruption Commission. They're very proud of their anti-corruption. So they're very tough on that.
It's a fascinating place. David, what a pleasure to see you.
And great pleasure also.
If you want to really get informed about the world and a lot of esoteric problems which exist, this is the place, the World Policy Forum. And you heard David's words. He knows from where he speaks, from whence he speaks. Good to have you on, David.
Thank you.
We need to bring you back and talk about. That's a real find, Bhutan. Really, I thought I knew the world.
It's fascinating. We're going to be posting a lot. I brought back about 1,500 stills.
Are many
about 6 hours
people
of tape.
Surprised to hear about this country?
They are. You know, it's very interesting. I got a call from one of Howard Stringer's top aides at Sony, who's going over there on a holiday in February, and she said, "I'm compelled by this country. I've got to have lunch with you on Monday and talk to you about it." So I'm going.
Would it be considered a resort?
Oh, their tourism is their largest single industry other than hydropower. It's their tourism is huge there.
So
it's a very big
place
deal.
To go.
Trekking and whatever, the Himalayas, you know.
My producers are ready to pack. They're ready to go. All right, David.
Leon,
good to see
great
you.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
Don't leave us. We'll be back with one of the political pros, Hank Shankoff, and he'll tell us whether Obama's really doing great or not great, and but I'm sure he'll have a Democratic slant. Don't leave us. We'll be right back.
Tall enough to reach the light switches.
I'm big enough to brush my teeth by myself.
I'm the tallest kid in my class.
I haven't worn diapers in years.
I'm much less likely to vomit at random now.
My cups don't have lids anymore.
Mine either.
I'm getting pretty big. But to help me survive a car crash, I still need you to give me a boost.
Until they're 4'9", use a booster seat in the car.
I present to you Algebra 2. Foreign languages. And finally, biology. Who among you will step up to their challenge?
Me.
Take on the tough classes now. You need them to prepare for college.
You talk to your kids about drugs and alcohol. You even got through that conversation about sex. Now, isn't it time you talk to them about lunch? With all the talk about being overweight, experts agree that eating 5 to 9 servings of colorful fruits and vegetables and being active every day will help our kids stay healthy and fit. Eat smarter. Be active. Get healthy, America.
So, April.
Yeah?
You know your charger's still using energy when it's plugged into the wall, right?
Yeah, but that's not my charger. I don't even have a cell phone.
Millions of kids are using their energy wisely. What's your excuse?
Okay. I'm a mommy. I love kids. I'm responsible, loving, nurturing. Mama's gonna be right back.
Mama's coming, baby!
Oh, oh, oh! Gotcha!
Ah, what did I just tell you, kids?
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
We're back with the only, the one and only, Hank Shankoff, who knows everything about politics in the United States. He's in love with Sarah Palin. He read the book from cover to cover, and he's giving out, he's a very observant Jew, and he's giving out his Hanukkah presents to everybody.
Well, she should save her money and buy a house. I'm convinced that'd be the good thing.
Yeah, but she's the phenomena.
Hank. Oh, no question.
So what is it? You're the guy that's supposed to give us the answer.
This is a culture of celebrity and entertainment, not a culture, and by the way, gossip as well. So therefore, our politics are infused with it. She's good-looking, she says outrageous things, and she's new. Therefore, she fits the pattern. And she's got scandal in her life with her kid and the child born out of wedlock and all the other things. So it's kind of interesting.
She's a celebrity.
That's right. Celebrity, gossip, and entertainment.
Does she have a political future?
I'm not sure about that. I think the Republican Party is in such trouble that she appears to be interesting now. The Democrats, by the way, are also in trouble. Both parties are really in trouble at their roots.
I'm correct. If I say you're a Democratic strategist,
you could say
correct.
That.
I mean, you don't work Republican side, right?
No, I just, although I always disclose, I just was a consultant.
Dick Morris used to be like you.
Well, Dick Morris, I owe Dick Morris an awful lot. Actually, he was very helpful in my career, but mm-hmm. I just worked for the re-election campaign of Michael Bloomberg,
everybody,
the mayor of the city of New York.
Everybody sat in that chair said, don't say anything, but I'm working for Bloomberg.
No, I'm proud of it, and I'm proud to work for the mayor.
Well, Tony Coles was on before, mm-hmm. former deputy mayor. He is really vehemently against this trial in New York City about the terrorists. What's your feeling about that?
Montana would have been a better place. That's me personally.
That's what I said. I said even White Plains would be better.
Why do you want to endanger? I mean, the potential for terrorist attack is constant. Why do you want to endanger people in that neighborhood? Why do you want to bring back the memories? What purpose does it serve to be here? Why do you want to close down that portion of Chinatown and Lower Manhattan for extraordinary periods of time? And the cost to the city of New York in very difficult fiscal time. What do you want to do that for?
Okay, why?
I don't know. You got me?
But you're a strategist. You have theories. You understand.
My theory is that it gives the Obama administration a law and order patina that in the place where this terrible thing occurred, the man who is responsible is going to be tried and appropriately dealt with by justice.
Yeah, I understand. He wants to show the American system works. And works very well for the, especially for the Arab and Muslim communities. Very interesting.
Very important.
I was in Monaco talking to the former foreign minister of Egypt who had just attended the speech of Obama at the Cairo University. They were really excited for 24 hours about it. I can't say Israel was, but they were. But it dissipated, and so he's always working on that. But what you say is absolutely true. First of all, the business aspect, too. And I say the same thing. So the terrorists occurred, by the way, in Pennsylvania also. You could have moved it to a court in Pennsylvania.
Why
bring it to New York City? Where if you have another accident or something like that, it's horror.
It's... I'm not sure. I told you the symbolic reasons for it.
I don't get it either.
I know that the city doesn't need it right now. I mean, Wall Street is under attack nationally by people, and Wall Street is the lifeblood of this town. And that's not good. And we don't need this either.
All right, so health care. Is he getting that thing through?
He's going to get something through. I predicted on CNN some months back that he would get a bill out by the end of the year, and he has. People didn't agree. Is it going to be... from a very partisan perspective.
Do you understand it, by the way?
I don't understand Esperanto, which was supposed to be the universal language invented by a Jewish fellow, but I don't understand that either. You know, so I'm wondering, maybe it's good to know Esperanto, maybe it's good to know what's in this bill. I don't understand it. What I do know is, and what I smell, is that special interests, big farm, okay, drug companies, and the insurance industry were well attended to, which makes no sense to me. I mean,
So is Lieberman going to vote for it?
I would bet not. I would bet not.
Isn't he trying to protect the insurance? You must know Joe Liebman very well.
Right? Not well, but I have met him, and I
know him well. He's an authentic, honorable man.
Absolutely.
And what he's doing is out of full conviction. It won't be a political move.
I don't think he's going to vote for that bill.
Well, he could be the stumbling block, couldn't he?
He could. The Democrats have real problems anyway. Whether or not this bill passes, the Democrats have trouble. Why? Midterm election, party in power, tends to lose seats. People are very disenchanted with the war, but they support the president's action, but they don't like the war. The chaos and the economy is not helpful. The Obama administration keeps saying things are getting better, but they may not feel that way in Michigan. Okay, serious problem. I think the Democrats could go down 35 seats next year. I think they might lose the Senate. That's how serious this is.
Well, what I said when Obama lost, and because we talk a lot about Israel on his show, is that the real winner in that election was Bibi Netanyahu. Because the pressure came off about the West Bank settlement. That's not the biggest thing on Obama's agenda.
No, but in my public speaking, I've been saying kind of the same thing for a while, which is when Obama took office, people said, well, Israel, blah. I said, wait a second, you don't understand this. Let me help you. You're not important anymore. Here's what's important to him. What's important to him is in order of sequence, Pakistan, 1, Russia, 2, Iran, 3. You're not on the top 5.
But the top 1 is jobs.
Well, domestically, no question.
And you can't move anything in this country until you get the jobs straightened out and the banking system. And without that, everything else falls.
Absolutely correct.
And you're a strategist. Why did he pick health care before he tackled really the whole fiscal problem here?
Well, he didn't just pick health care. He picked everything.
Yeah, but
I mean,
he shot a lot of
a lot of stuff.
Mario Cuomo was in your seat, who's a real Democrat, and says, you know, Leon, he's got too much margarine spread on his plate.
Absolutely true. Mario Cuomo, as usual, correct, and he's correct here. Too much to do, too many promises to do too many things over too short a period of time. End result, very little gets done, and what gets done, frankly, may not be appreciated, nor accepted, nor thought to be enough.
Did you work on his campaign?
Did not. I plead Clintonitis.
Hillary.
I thought she would have been a great president. Still do. I think that she...
Will she ever run again?
I don't think so.
She's tired, probably.
She's a good public servant, and she is much more what the country needed from a foreign policy perspective, without question.
Ed Koch, your friend and my friend, says everybody in Albany should be thrown out.
Why not?
What do you say?
Start all over again. Sometimes you just need to clean the blackboard off. You know, get the eraser and eraser. I think you're not going to see that. What I do think you'll see, which is a national trend, New Yorkers sometimes forget. Well, more than that, I believe you're going to see bipartisan murder next year. What do I mean? People are just going to go into the voting booth and get rid of people because they had enough. They're disgusted. And you know what? It's reasonable for disgusted. Would I bet that the Democrats hold on to the Senate in New York State? The answer is no. Would I bet that the Republicans gain the Senate in New York State? The answer is no. I don't know who's going to win. But I do know that there are going to be a lot of unhappy people if this continues, and there's no way it can't. We are not in a fiscal crisis. Well, excuse me, we're not in a budget gap. No, we're in a fiscal crisis.
Right. And we're printing money. And there's a symbolism between those two governors' races. What did that tell you? Did that surprise you at all?
I was not surprised. In Virginia, the guy kind of gave up and wasn't really very good, the Democrat. I was a bit surprised by the depth of what occurred in New Jersey, because a generic Democrat, any Democrat, has an 8-point advantage in turnout. What happened there is that people just got disgusted. I think the more importantly, a local race is when you look. In New York City suburbs, Nassau and Westchester, the Democrats were thrown out in both cases. Not because they were Democrats. Not because so much they were Democrats, they just happened to vote for taxes. So people who vote for taxes and are perceived to be hurting the middle class are going to get killed. Therefore, coming back to the New York State Senate, I would suggest retirement is probably a better option for some of those guys. But they're not going to.
Do you think the New York Senate seat will go to a Republican now? I'm talking, what's her name?
Gillibrand. You can't beat nobody with nothing, as they used to say in Brooklyn. Okay, so you got to come up with somebody. And there's nobody right now to run against her. My hunch is Ed
Tony
Cox.
Tony Coles just said that Rudy Giuliani will not run for Senate.
Rudy Giuliani would be very, very tough for Gillibrand. Very tough for Gillibrand. And I'm not surprised that he probably wouldn't run, because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, why does he want to sit
in the Senate? Be aggravated for?
Right, they sit there in the Senate.
But can she be beaten? The answer is yes. But you can't beat nobody with nothing. You got to have somebody. And right now, there's nobody.
The Republicans now have Richard Nixon's son-in-law who runs that party.
He's a very good fellow, Ed Cox, a nice man. He's committed. He's a hard worker, serious person. And I think that there's some argument to be made that two parties are probably a good thing to have. You ought to have competition. It forces politicians to behave appropriately. And we know what happens now when parties are not competitive. Politicians do the most extraordinary things. They need to feel some sense of pressure.
I said that originally when Obama and the Democrats won the Congress. I said it's not always the best way to govern. You need really strong opposition. By the way, the Democrats are not all united. You have blue dogs and red dogs, so you know that. These guys have egos bigger than the sky here.
The primary importance is not getting the work of the people done. The primary importance is to get reelected, which people don't understand. The danger that we are facing and the problem in our electoral politics and our system is that the legislative bodies, whether they be the city councils or the state senates or in assemblies or the Congress or U.S. Senate, do not respond anymore to the people, because that's not the constituency. Their client base are the special interests that fund elections. Now, New York City is a lot better. We have the best campaign finance system in the country for good government purposes, but overall, people are doing what they got to do for the interests that they represent, which are not the people. Now, who represents the people in these situations now? And probably the executive, the president, the governor, the mayor. And you notice that's where the action is. That's where the people are expressing the most angst, because people aren't stupid. They figured this out already.
I agree with you. Patterson, can he win in New York?
Look, I was just talking to President Hillary Clinton about Governor Spitzer. And they were explaining, you know what I mean? Anything can happen, Leon. Do I think it's probable today? The answer is no.
You think Andy Cuomo?
Right now, the Senate in New York State is being made the enemy of the people, and the Governor Patterson is doing a great job at that and having a good time. The problem is going to become January, when the legislature comes back and when the public looks, because they will blame only one person for the failure to have a budget, the captain of the ship, and his name is David Patterson. Andrew Cuomo... should he choose to enter the race, and I believe he will be seen as the savior if he positions himself properly. The guy who can straighten out the apparently rudderless ship of an Albany gone nuts.
People are very disheartened by Albany, and the taxes, by the way, that are coming out of Albany for middle people.
Very difficult. When the Obama tax kicks in for health care on small businesses and everybody else, New York City will be in very serious trouble. Between that and the increases at the city level and the state level. Why? Simple. At a 60% tax rate, because remember, the Bush tax cuts are over next year, and the federal tax goes to top 40 at that point. At a 60% rate, why would people stay in New York City? What is the purpose of it?
Nevada's a better place. Less tax.
Nevada? How about New Jersey? Well, New Jersey even.
New Jersey's not
so good. Connecticut, really tax-free? Bali. Bali. No, I'm not
the place we just spoke about, the Shangri-La. Yeah, that's the best place.
Okay, Shangri-La, very nice.
So you work with Bloomberg. I think he did a great job for two terms here. What motivated him to run? And by the way, did he think of me so close with Thompson? Did you?
I really can't talk about the campaign. But what I can say is that I think he's done a good job as mayor. When talking about turnouts without speaking directly to the Bloomberg campaign, what I would say is that the city has demographically changed, that the voters are not as excited about municipal politics anymore. And when we were young people, remember then, before it was, it was 1909, I suppose 2009, you and I were young then.
McKinley.
Yeah, one of those guys from Ohio. Right. Anyway, people were very excited about municipal politics. There was passion behind it, but they're not. What they're really excited about is national politics. They're not even excited about statewide politics. They're disgusted. Big difference. So they're not turning out.
All right, you're a brilliant guy. What would you tell Tiger Woods tonight? You're a strategist.
Too late. I tell Tiger the time to
too
move.
Too late to meet another woman, or too late?
I'd give him some financial advice. I'd say when you hit 20, sell.
So, would you go long his stock or short his stock?
I would frankly stop the action. Try to get the facts. This has been handled from a public relations. Look, I'm the guy. I did the McGreevy thing. I mean, I've done a whole bunch of stuff like that, right? Quietly over my career. Kind of serious crises where public reputations, public lives are in danger, but in the financial sector as well. I think the way you handle it is you get in front of the story the day it starts. Okay? But he hasn't done that. So I think that there has to be I would get a spokesman in front of this thing right away, and I would start disseminating some information on the Tiger Woods side. And it wouldn't be might be a lawyer, but it probably would not be.
Strategists. There are guys who do this, like you.
I've done it.
Hank, happy Hanukkah.
Leon, you're the best. Hanukkah Sameach to you and yours. All the best.
We'll see you next week. I hope you have a great holiday. And I always tell you, if you're an atheist, celebrate anyway. What's the difference? And buy a few candles. It'll make you feel spiritual. We'll see you next week.